Imagine spending, I don't know, thousands of dollars just to bring a VIP customer right to the front door of your business.
Right, you did all the heavy lifting.
Exactly. You ran the marketing, they clicked your ad, they put the actual item in their cart.
And they are ready to pay.
Yeah, they're ready to pay. But then your own security guard just turns them away because they, I don't know, they didn't like the font on their ID.
Which sounds ridiculous, but that's exactly what's happening.
Right now, U.S. merchants are losing just a massive chunk of their revenue to this exact scenario.
Yeah, and usually, you know, when we talk about driving revenue, there's this expectation that it's all about acquiring new customers.
Oh, for sure. You just spin up a new marketing campaign and watch the top of the funnel.
Right. Most operators think growth is just, it's strictly an addition game, like bring more people to the checkout page and the math just works itself out.
But then you step into the actual mechanics of your checkout and suddenly you realize the front door is literally stuck.
It's jammed completely.
Yeah. We are looking at a payments landscape right now in 2026 where you might be doing, you know, all the hard work to win a customer only to lose them at the very last millisecond because of some technical miscommunication.
Which is painful.
Very painful. So, welcome to The Deep Dive. I am your analyst co-host at MyPayAdvisor, and today we are speaking directly to you, the U.S. operator processing anywhere from $25,000 to $5 million in monthly volume.
That's the sweet spot we're looking at.
Yep. And if you are in that tier, you are probably just agonizing over customer acquisition costs right now. But you might be completely ignoring the revenue that's just leaking out of the bottom of your checkout flow.
We really need to anchor this conversation to the reality of your current metrics, though.
Right. Let's look at the numbers.
Yeah. So according to the approval rate optimization playbook sitting right here on the table, the average U.S. card not present merchant sees an approval rate sitting around 85 to 92%.
Which means there's an 8 to 12 point gap of declined transactions just sitting there. So our mission for today's MyPayAdvisor session is highly specific. We are going to break down the top three or four takeaways to close that 8 to 12 point gap.
And we really need to be very clear about how we define this gap, too.
Because it's not what people think.
Right. This is not lost sales. This is recovered revenue.
Yes. Huge difference.
I mean, these are customers who want to buy your product, who have the funds in their account, and who are actively trying to pay you.
They are literally handing you their wallet.
Exactly. So we are going to walk through the exact mathematical playbook to capture that volume.
And to do that, we brought a pretty heavy stack of essential reading.
Yeah, we have a lot to get through.
Our primary guide is the approval rate optimization playbook. But we are also supplementing that with aggregate data from the Federal Reserve Payment Study, Visa's processing rules, and the latest global fraud context from the Nilson report.
So before we start fixing the gap, we have to understand how the gatekeeper actually evaluates your transactions.
Because you can't fix what you don't understand.
Exactly. We need to know what a decline actually costs your business and, you know, why the system rejects good customers in the first place.
Okay, let's unpack this. The journey of an authorization is just incredibly fast.
It's basically instant to the consumer.
Yeah, we're talking about a 300 millisecond window. And in that third of a second, your transaction travels through five distinct parties.
Five of them.
Yep. It starts at your checkout, goes to your payment gateway, passes to your acquiring bank, hits the card network like Visa or MasterCard, and finally lands at the issuing bank.
And that last party, the issuing bank, is literally the only one making a decision.
Wait, really? The others don't decide?
No, everyone else in that chain is just plumbing. They just pass the message along.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and the Federal Reserve Payments Study tracks this aggregate authorization data across all the networks.
And what do they actually see in that data?
Well, what they see is that physical card-present transactions, they clear at very high rates, like almost perfectly.
Because the card is right there.
Right. But card-not-present transactions really struggle. They sit near that 85% average we talked about.
So I like to think about this process like a bouncer at an exclusive club.
I love this analogy.
Right. So your payment gateway and your acquirer, they are just the driver in the car. They do a great job driving your customer right up to the front of the line.
Safely and quickly.
Exactly. But the issuing bank is the bouncer actually looking at the ID data.
Yep.
It just doesn't matter how good a driver your acquirer is. If you hand the bouncer incomplete data or a blurry ID or the wrong passcode, they're going to reject your customer.
The bouncer makes the final call every time.
So why are they so strict?
Well, that is a highly accurate way to visualize it, but the reason the bouncer is so strict is because they carry the financial risk.
Ah, right. It's their money on the line if it's fraud.
Exactly. The issuer's decision engine is looking at several inputs at once to assess that risk.
Like what kind of inputs?
Well, for example, they look at cardholder velocity.
What does that mean in practice?
So, if an issuer sees a card used for a $5 coffee in New York, and then, say, 3 minutes later for a $500 software subscription in London,
Oh yeah, that looks super sketchy.
right, that velocity triggers a tripwire. The system just assumes the card is compromised.
So they are not just checking if the bank account actually has money in it.
No, not at all.
They are checking behavioral patterns.
Exactly. They look at fraud scoring risk weights like FICO Falcon.
Which is an AI model, right?
Yeah, it's an AI model that looks for out-of-character spending patterns.
So it knows if I suddenly buy things I never usually buy.
Yes. And they also look at rules set at the bank identification number level or BN level.
Okay.
They check if your address verification system and CVV data actually matches.
And if they don't, it's a huge red flag.
Right. And they look for the presence of a network token. They are just extremely defensive.
And they have to be right, based on the fraud numbers.
Yeah. The Nilson report notes that worldwide fraud losses reached $0.14 billion in 2023. And with the US accounting for 0.19% of those losses.
That's very specific.
It is, but even at those specific fractions of a percent, the context really explains why issuers build these complex models to block anything that looks even slightly unusual.
So the bouncer is literally on high alert at all times.
Constantly.
And since the issuer makes the rules, you just have to play by them when they reject a transaction.
You have no choice.
So let us talk about damage control. If the bouncer turns my customer away, how do I actually know why?
You look at the reason code they hand back to you?
Okay, where do I find that?
Well, the playbook details ISO 8583 response codes.
Right, the industry standard stuff.
Yeah, and they fall into two main operational categories. You have soft declines.
That's worth what codes?
Those are codes like 05, 41, 51, 65, and 91.
Okay, got it.
And then you have hard declines, which are codes 04, 14, 54, and 78.
So a hard decline basically means the card is stolen, lost, or just completely invalid.
Right.
The bouncer is telling you to never bring that person back.
Do not try again.
But a soft decline is different, right?
Yeah.
Like a code 51 just means insufficient
Yeah,
funds.
exactly. They just need to move money over.
And a code 05 is a general do not honor message, which basically means the bank's risk model got spooked, but the card itself is actually valid.
What's really fascinating here is the ratio.
How so?
Well, about 35% of a typical merchant's declines are soft declines.
35%. That's massive.
It is, but most merchants just use naive checkouts.
Meaning they don't do anything smart with that data.
Right. When a code 05 comes back, the checkout simply shows a generic decline screen.
Like, your card was declined. Please try another payment method.
Yes. It essentially tells the customer to go away, and the customer just abandons the purchase.
Wow.
You are literally letting 35% of your rejected customers walk away when the bouncer just needed them to step out of line for a minute.
So what should we be doing instead? Because the playbook shows that retrying a soft decline 24 hours later, making sure to use the specific retry flag in your code, recovers 40 to 60% of those transactions.
Right, because it gives the cardholder time to move funds.
Or it just gives the bank's fraud model time to cool off, right?
It does, but operators need to be incredibly careful here.
Why? What's the risk?
Visa has a very strict stored credential reattempt framework.
Okay.
If you hit the exact same card 5 times in a 10-minute window after getting a code 05 decline, your BIN gets flagged by the issuer.
Wait, hold on. Let me look at this from an operator perspective for a second.
Sure.
If I am processing, say, $500,000 a month, how much damage can one poorly coded retry loop really do?
A lot.
I mean, we were just talking about a few failed pings on one customer's card. Is it really that big of a deal?
It is catastrophic for your cash flow.
Really, just from one card?
Yeah, because the penalty does not just apply to that single
Oh.
customer. If you trigger that block, it takes down hundreds of valid customer renewals all at once.
How is that even possible?
Because the cap applies at the BNing and merchant ID level.
Wow. So it's not per user.
No. Once you trip that wire, the issuer blocks your entire merchant ID from processing any cards on that specific bank identification number for a full 24 hours.
So if I have a batch of, like, 1,000 renewals on Chase cards,
yeah,
and one card trips the wire,
your entire batch of renewals on that bank's cards will fail.
That is a brutal penalty just for being a little too aggressive.
It really is. So rescuing soft declines requires absolute precision.
You have to wait for the failure, and then you retry very carefully.
Exactly.
But reacting to a failure is still inefficient, right?
It is.
I mean, why are we letting these cards fail in the first place? How do we stop the bouncer from even questioning the ID?
That brings us to proactive measures. We really need to talk about network tokens and account updaters.
Okay, let us start with tokens. What are they?
So instead of passing a raw primary account number, or PAN,
which is just the long number on the front of the card.
Right. Instead of that, a network token is a unique cryptographic identifier.
Okay, and why is that better?
It is bound to your specific merchant ID and the customer's specific device.
So it can't be stolen and used elsewhere.
Exactly. Both Visa and MasterCard have published documents showing just measurable approval lifts for tokenized transactions.
Okay, so going back to our analogy, a network token is basically a cryptographic VIP wristband.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
The bouncer sees the wristband, knows the network already verified this customer, and just waves them right through without even checking the ID again.
And network tokens do a lot more than just improve your approval rate, too.
What else do they do?
They also reduce your processing costs.
Oh, I like the sound of that. How?
Well, Visa's official rules explain that interchange fees are used to balance the payment system.
Right.
Because network tokens carry significantly less fraud risk, the networks actively reward tokenized transactions with lower interchange rates.
So your approval lift and your interchange reduction, they compound on the exact same processing volume.
They do.
You recover revenue, and you actually pay less to process it.
It's a win-win.
That is amazing.
Ugh.
But we also need to talk about the hard declines, specifically expired cards.
Yes, that's a huge bucket.
The playbook notes that roughly 25% of typical declines are code 54.
Which means the card has expired.
Right. And to fix this, you use the account updater service.
Yeah, there is the Visa account updater and the MasterCard automatic billing updater.
And what do those actually do?
This service basically maps the old card number to the new one issued by the bank.
So it updates it for you.
Exactly. It pulls new credentials directly into your payment vault before your next billing cycle even runs.
So it solves the problem before the customer even realizes their card was about to expire.
Yep. You never have to send that awkward email asking them to please log in and update their payment info.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting to me. If network tokens act as a VIP wristband that lowers your fees and account updaters automatically fix a quarter of your declines,
yeah,
why is the average merchant not enrolled right now? Like, I just assume every payment platform does this out of the box.
You know, it sounds like it should be default, but it is not automatic at all.
Really? Why not?
Enrollment is often hidden.
Hidden how?
Like, if you use a major platform like Stripe, Adyen, or Braintree, they fully support these tools.
Right. They're huge players.
But they require explicit activation. Operators just assume their payment processor is handling all this optimization in the background.
And they're just not doing it.
They are not. You literally have to log into your dashboard, find the specific billing setting, and turn it on yourself.
Wow.
In some cases, you even have to send a specific API parameter just to request the token.
Okay. So let us say I do the work. I go in. I flip the switch.
Okay.
I have tokens running. Mm-hmm. I am updating expired cards automatically. And I have a smart, polite retry loop for my soft declines.
You're doing great.
I assume my approval rate is just bulletproof at this point, right?
Well, not if your baseline data is wrong.
Wait, what do you mean?
Even with network tokens active, passing the wrong baseline data guarantees an automatic penalty from the issuer.
So I can still get rejected.
Oh, for sure. The bouncer might see your VIP wristband, but if you are breaking the basic rules of the club, you still get rejected.
Okay, the playbook highlight some very specific data penalties here.
It does.
For example, skipping the CVV on returning customers.
This is a huge one.
Yeah, some merchants think that, you know, once a customer's in the vault, they just don't need to ask for those three digits on the back of the card ever again.
Which is a massive mistake.
Because the data shows that skipping the CVV is a direct 2 to 4 point penalty on your approval rates.
2 to 4 points is a lot.
It is.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, The data quality issue extends to your merchant category code, or MCC.
What does that code actually do?
Your MCC tells the issuing bank exactly what kind of business you run. So a software as a service company classified as 5734, which is computer software stores,
yeah,
they will see much higher decline rates than the exact same business correctly coded under 5817, which is digital goods media.
So if my MCC is wrong, I am basically showing up to a black tie club in a bathing suit.
That is exactly what you're doing.
The bouncer just doesn't care if my ID is valid.
Wait.
I fail the baseline profile check entirely.
Right.
So how bad is the penalty for that mismatch, actually?
It literally forces you to fight an uphill battle on every single swipe.
Wow.
The issuer uses your MCC to determine the baseline risk of your specific neighborhood.
Okay, that makes sense.
And digital goods have entirely different fraud profiles than boxed software stores.
So if I change my business model?
If you undergo a vertical pivot or launch a new product line without updating your MCC, the fraud model just assumes your transaction is an anomaly.
Because you suddenly don't look like your own profile.
Exactly. But a simple bookkeeping audit to compare your assigned MCC against your actual product mix, that can recover 1 to 3 approval points within 30 days.
Just from changing a code?
Yes.
Now, the data requirements get even stricter for subscription operators, right?
They do.
Because if you are billing a customer every month, those renewals must carry the recurring transaction indicator.
Yes, that is mandatory.
And they also need the original network transaction ID from the very first time the customer checked out.
Without those two pieces of data, the issuer looks at the renewal as a brand new, highly risky card, not present transaction.
They don't even know it's a subscription.
No, they treat it as if a stranger just walked up and tried to run the card out of nowhere.
That sounds like a guaranteed decline.
It usually is. You have to provide the digital paper trail to prove the cardholder actually agreed to the recurring charge months ago.
Okay, so let us put all of these concepts together now. We really need to apply the math to a real-world operator scenario.
That's a good idea.
Because audio math is incredibly hard to follow. So let us just focus on the delta here. Let us look at a case study for a business sitting right in our target audience volume tier.
We can just use the profile of a standard mid-market operator.
Okay, so we have a B2B software as a service company, and they are billing monthly.
Got it.
Their processing volume is $800,000 a month.
Okay, solid volume.
Their average ticket size is $89.
Yeah.
And their current approval rate is sitting at 89%.
So out of that $800,000, they're bleeding almost 88 grand a month in failed transactions.
$88,000 a month. Just gone.
That is a massive leak.
Yeah.
So let us break down the recovery math based on the playbook averages we just talked about.
Okay, let's do it.
We know soft declines make up 35% of that failure bucket.
Right.
So just by asking the bouncer nicely, applying the capped 24-hour retry logic, the merchant yields roughly $15,000 monthly.
Okay, so that is $15,000 just from retrying polite declines without triggering a bin block.
Exactly. Then we look at the expired cards.
Okay.
Code 54 makes up 25% of their declines.
Right.
If we turn on the account updater service, we automatically map those new credentials.
And what does that get us?
That yields another $16,000 recovered every single month.
Okay.
Next, we activate network tokens.
The VIP wristbands.
Yep. Tokens provide a modeled 3 percentage point lift across the entire $800,000 volume.
Because the issuer actually trusts that cryptographic pass.
Right. And that yields another $24,000 in additional approvals monthly.
So what does this all mean when we add it up? We have $15,000 from SOM declines.
Yeah.
$16,000 from the updater.
Right.
And $24,000 from network tokens.
Like.
So your total recovered revenue is roughly $55,000 per month.
Which is huge.
That is over $670,000 per year.
And netting $670,000 in recovered revenue, I mean, that often exceeds a full year of growth marketing spend for a company at this tier.
And you do not have to acquire a single new customer to get that money.
You already won them. They're already there.
The fixed cost to capture it is just, what, a few weeks of engineering work and a few dashboard toggles.
That is the defining operator realization right there.
It's all just sitting there.
You do not need a massive strategic pivot. You just need operational hygiene.
Yeah.
You are plugging a leak at the bottom of the funnel instead of just trying to pour more and more water into the top.
which is just so much more efficient. So now we need to give our listeners the operator's so what.
Right. What do they actually do?
You have the math. You have the mechanics. What is the strict playbook the merchants listening right now should go and execute this week?
Okay. Step one, call your acquirer and pull a 90-day decline reason code report by BAN.
You got to get the data first.
Step two, segment that report into your soft, hard, and expired buckets. Find out exactly where your money is actually bleeding.
Okay.
Step three, enroll in network tokens. But, and this is important, test your vault migration path first on a small cohort.
Yeah, do not flip the switch blindly and risk taking your entire customer base offline.
Exactly. Step four, enable the account updater service.
Easy enough.
And step five, build the capped retry logic we discussed, making sure to stay well below Visa's thresholds.
So five steps. You map the codes, segment the failures, turn on the VIP wristbands, update the expired cards, and retry the soft declines very carefully.
But this raises an important question, though.
What's that?
When you go to execute step one and you ask your processor for a decline reason code report by BIN-MN, they might refuse.
Really? Why would they refuse?
Or they might say their system is just cannot produce it. And if that happens, that is a massive red flag.
Wow.
It forces you to ask a very uncomfortable question. Is your acquiring partner actually equipped to help you optimize your business? Or are they just sitting back and collecting their interchange margin while you bleed revenue? That is a sobering thought.
It is.
I mean, if your driver will not even tell you why the bouncer rejected your customers, it might really be time to find a new ride to the club.
I completely agree.
Take a hard look at your data this week. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.